Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet, and welcome to our ultimate, penultimate, who could say, recording of our holiday extravaganza here at Waypoint. But I don't know if this episode will be last or if this episode will be second.
Because we did Waypoints of the Year, of the Decade, last time. Last year, right?
Yeah. I think that makes, I like that. I like going out on Waypoints instead of Goaty. Goaty's business. Waypoints is festive.
It's all cheer. We're mopping up. It's like, what up? Look at this shitty year.
Right.
Look
right.
at these good games.
Let's have a beer. Put it in a stew. Exactly. This is the situation.
I'm also walking out
with the voice of Patrick Klepek. You also maybe heard the of Gita Jackson. Also joining us.
You know what it is.
You already know what it is.
Gita Jackson.
And Rob Zachney also here with us. Rob?
Yeah, how's it going?
Okay.
It sounded like you were just going to keep going, so I was like, I'm not going to.
Your camera's not on, so I don't know what your affect is at the moment.
Right, I don't know how to read Rob. Reading Rob Zachney.
Also, Austin's is also
Rob an audiobook collection.
Oh, beautiful Christmas tree, Rob.
It's a beautiful Christmas tree. That's what it is.
Oh, that's beautiful. Has Mina tried to attack it?
So Mina's been good about the Christmas tree. I think there was kind of an interesting energy when we put the tree up. She seemed a little concerned. And she had she's trying to figure out what we were doing. Like, she was not happy about the entire tree decoration thing that was happening. And she seemed to understand at some point that, like, something important was happening, but it was also concerning and not relevant to her. And then she ignored the tree, and that's kind of where she's been since. Like, she doesn't.
Great.
Occasionally she sniffs it and, like, boops a ornament, but she hasn't investigated it much, which is probably for the best.
She's just kind of like, I know what a tree is. It doesn't matter to me.
It's chill.
I've seen trees before.
Amazing. Well, we are here with a strict time limit and a question mark as to what the day will hold in some ways. This is our Game of the Year podcast, and we decided to have kind of a setup where we're not going to just ramble forever. I don't think there's going to be a timer involved necessarily, but we do have a hard out on both of our recordings today. And that means we have to be a little bit tighter today. But what we don't know is how we're breaking this podcast up, because we haven't talked about our Game of the Year choices. Though I bet I could infer.
Well, there was a lot of bong on a previous podcast that if you're making a spreadsheet, you could figure out a couple of them.
Rob is my mystery person. Reading Rob Zachney again, here's my guess. Kato is Umurangi generation along with me.
That's my vote.
Patrick is Hades. You said that just before the podcast, so I tried to tell you to shut up so we could talk about this.
That wouldn't have been a hard guess.
It was 100%. I knew we were going to pick Hades.
And then Gita, did you also pick Hades? Which, that's where my thought is, but I don't know.
No comment.
Are
we doing it right now? Are we guessing right now?
I had for Crusader Kings.
I don't know if I know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm the person when you ask me to order something in a restaurant, I'm like, let me go last, please.
Sure. Yeah.
I still don't know. Well, everything looks so good.
We can continue to put the caveat that for the purpose of this podcast, you will pick one. But in your list, if it differs because that day you woke up and felt differently, that's fine. Because who gives a shit?
Yeah, you open up Crusader Kings
video games, man.
And fucked around with the new, like, the character creator where you can make different faces and stuff. If you're like, damn, this actually pushes it over the edge. then that it does. It is what it is.
You want honest? And if I was riding the vibe, my game of the year would be Lithium City, and it wouldn't be Hades. So.
That game fucking rules. That game is last so year, good.
Last night I went to a place, and I went to Lithium City, and it ruled.
You were only there for an hour, but what an hour it was.
That's fine. You know what? That's all you need.
You know?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into it then. Where do we want to start with this discussion of our games of the year? I'm not going to make a guess on Rob. It could be CK3. It could be something I've never heard of. In my mind, Rob Lee lived such a private life that he could bust out. He could be like, oh, yeah, I really got into Football Manager this year. I haven't mentioned it, but it's a great addition. And here are all the reasons why it's the best game you didn't play this year.
Alien Isolation.
Waypoints. 2020 game of the year.
Rob would argue I put a mod in it, thus changing the game code that now qualifies game of the year.
It becomes a new game at that point.
We've also always been like, fuck it. What's your game of the year? I don't care if it came out this year.
Sure.
That's us.
Yeah.
So if Rob did want to go to bat for something that came out in like 2003.
Then it would be Ace Combat, possibly, but I think still. I can just tell you. The caveat is it's been a weird year, and a lot of the games I put the most time into I didn't love. And so it's a weird thing where it's like, I played a ton of Last of Us 2, didn't like it, but I basically like analyzed that crime scene from every angle. So don't need to go back there. But if we want to talk about like the thing that I just fell head over heels for, and I'm looking forward to this break primarily so I can get back to playing it for hours and hours a day. It's gonna be Demon's Souls.
My game of the year is Rob Zachney.
Yes! Wow!
Waypoint was
what
worth it.
Happened here? What?
I'm gonna go running around like when the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
Patrick's got his hands in the air, like Rocky running around Philadelphia.
My camera isn't working. I promise I'm praising the sun all the way.
He's right here.
Patrick has a little Solaris in the background.
I have no action figures on my desk except for Wii Fit Trainer and Solaris. That's my selection.
That's
so great.
It's fine. It's fine.
That sums
you up. You know what I mean.
I do, but it's funnier. Rob, let's talk about Demon's Souls.
Yeah, I mean, the caveat here is that I haven't gotten that far because I'm not good at it. Like, I've put a lot of time into leveling my character, but have I, like, beaten that many bosses? No, but like first trying, who's the boss at the end of the first stage of Tower of Latria? The Fool.
Phalanx? Oh, no, Latria. The Fool's Idol or whatever.
Fool's Idol. Yeah.
Fool's Idol.
Like having finally waded my way to that and having this full on, like really tense cat and mouse battle with her, and then to have her respawn after I'd burned through every single like heal item I brought into the fight. I was out of ammo. I'd been cheesing her quite a bit with the bow and arrow to try and sort of stand at a distance. And because the way that fight worked was like she keeps spawning false copies of herself. And so I was sort of like using the short bow to figure out which one was the real one, because the damage hits differently when you're hitting the actual target.
And it's also permanent. Like you, it's like persists over like this, like as they summon back in those, the false ones keep that. As I had forgotten that little tidbit, like when I replayed that boss, but I was like, oh, that's such a good to keep that as like a really fun UI indicator.
Yeah. And so like I have this entire battle where like a heart is in my mouth because Latria at this point, I'd gotten good at the early stages. Like I was just fucking up those bell ringers. Like there's no tomorrow. Like they were just big bags of souls at that point. And I loved it. But I'd gone through it so many times and I'd finally gotten to a place where I was ready to hit this final stage. I didn't feel like I needed to back out and like purchase items and everything. I fight this boss. And we have this huge battle in this church. It's just it's a cool space. It's tense as hell. And it's a tough boss fight. And I'm like, I fucking nailed it. I won. And then there's this laughter from above. And the boss spawns back in. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And at that point, it was like, I can't do this again. I think emotionally I'll be broken if I have to fight through this battle yet again. And so I basically had to do the fight now flawlessly. Where I, because you get the option to exit out of the fight after mm-hmm. she responds, I was like, that laughter came from above. I'll bet it's that fucker I didn't kill earlier.
Oh, you should have killed him.
I thought he was going to turn into a vendor. And there've been sure. signs where it's like,
that makes sense.
Prepare for a liar or something like that. But I'm like, that could be people trying to fuck with me who are like, totally. Hey, attack this vendor. And like totally like hose yourself. And he seemed like a harmless little dude who's just playing with his magic balls. It sounds weird, but if you see the scene, it makes sense. He's he's weaving spells, and it's
the
like
feeling little... of just sinking regret and disappointment that you're describing. It's just all of 2020, and I feel like it's very appropriate that this is your game of the year.
You know? Yeah, where
you
it's like, oh,
all that work, and then this little fucker's gonna come and ruin it for you in a way you did not expect. Like,
oh, you know what? I had a good day, and it's like, oh shit, there's another one.
5:05 p.m. and that motherfucker is spinning the spell. I cannot believe it.
And I should have known. It was like he was right there. Like there wasn't like there was evidence that like this guy was up to no good. But instead, I totally ignored that. And so I had to go back down there after the fact and go fight this boss a second time, this time with no ammo left to actually, like, figure out which is the real target, with no more heal items, really, to, like, endure. Because the false idols start shooting lightning at you and, like... They don't track real well. It's more like they're auto-firing. But still, if you stay out in the open, you're going to get hit.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's a bad scene.
And she especially starts late in that fight when there's just so many of them.
Yeah.
And they're all just blasting. Yeah.
Right. Like, eventually, it just turns into, like, a laser grid in a heist movie, right? Where it's like, I don't know where I'm supposed to go to not get fucked up by this. Mm-hmm.
You just run and then whack, and you're just hoping that that's going to be the one that's like, okay, great, get my four hits in.
Oh, God.
And it's at moments like these, you know, you do have to question, is my luck stat helping me in this situation? Like, did I possibly...
Well, drops don't mean shit though. If you can't actually drop the enemy, Rob.
Did I put too many points in the luck? Especially because the little bell guys drop a magic item... That isn't mm-hmm. relevant to my non-magic using build. Mm-hmm. So what was that all for? Which is also a very 2020 mood. What was the point of this? What have I done?
Yeah. What was the point of this? 2020.
Yeah. But I go back down there and I start on the fight and like I'm just clicking. Like for some reason, even though the first fight was like hard as hell, the second time through, I'm like, I'm rocking this. Like yeah. I have it. I have the pattern, but I eat a few bad hits and I'm like, I'm fucked. Like again, like I'm out of heal items. I'm doomed. She's at half health. There's no way I'm going to do this with the sliver of health I have left. And then I was like, wait, I have an item that restores my physical corporeal form.
Oh yeah. And that'll heal you too.
All the way, baby. And I was like, I wonder how this works. And I just hit it and suddenly the bar fills all the way up. And I was like, oh shit! I think I've got this. Like, I think
this is this the Philly special moment
there.
Of yeah. Rob's fight in against the Philly.
Yeah. Yeah, and so go out there and win the fight. It was an incredible feeling to finally take her down, and then immediately get whipped into the sky by a fucking gargoyle, which was cool as hell. And I'm like. I don't think there was anything that was anywhere near as completely absorbing or engaging as Demon's Souls. This also made it a harder game for me to stick with in some ways, because it's a game where, like, I wasn't wrong years ago. I was like, I don't have time for this in my life. I still kind of don't.
Right.
This is a thing where I'm like, boy, this is a game that really rewards you if you have, like, 3-4 hours to burn in a sitting to just keep, you know, plinking away at this. But if I have that time... It's incredible. Like, it's just such an incredible way to spend that time. And, like, each time I see a new place and like, encounter new things, I'm like, one, cool, I've made it to a new location. But two, the level of tension is just through the roof. The dread I feel from seeing something I don't recognize, a silhouette I don't recognize, like sort of lurking at the back of a swamp or something. What the fuck is that? What is that? what's that coming at me? It's incredible.
And even when you have all the information, it's still a horror game of your own making because inevitably you will fuck up despite having all the available information right in front of you.
I have been thinking a lot about the stuff that you're talking about here, especially in terms of economies of attention and the ways in which different games act on me differently and make different demands of my attention. Playing through Demon's Souls this year was so great because it totally consumed me, but not in the same way that something more, I mean, I think you can actually dial this back to when Demon's Souls first dropped. You know, it comes out in the midst of the open world, you know, explosion, right? GTA 4 had come out a couple, I mean, maybe a year before Assassin's Creed was kicking off. The market was rushing towards big open world games with reused assets. And Demon's Souls always seemed like, in the Souls games in general, and I'd say FromSoft games even before Demon's Souls, were always focused on like, listen, we're not going to give you something that is expansive in the way that you might think. And yet each space is going to be filled with really discrete, new, cool experiences. I think part of the reason Dark Souls blows up so much bigger than Demon's Souls does is because it weaves that together with the feeling of an open world, a big interconnected place.
Yeah.
Where you're not necessarily in a sandbox the way you are with GTA or something like that, but you can still feel like you're exploring a big unified world in that way.
You definitely want to go to Undead Burg first, but right, you know, but you don't have to.
Right, exactly.
And it doesn't feel like you're choosing a, you know, a sequential a stone as you are in Demon's Stone.
Totally. But to some degree, it felt like a return to form in that way to classic games. I've always felt like those games were the kind of successor to like the Castlevania games, for instance, where it's like, okay, what's cool in this level? What new enemy types am I getting, et cetera? Mm-hmm. And it's so good at, you know, I'm playing through Cyberpunk right now, and that has a different effect on my attention, which is the same effect that Fallout or Skyrim does, which is like, it is meant to grind my brain into a mush that then just filters through a filter for 8 hours, and nothing really is happening unless I'm on main story stuff. And it's just like, all right, I'm turning my brain off. And Demon's Souls can make the same amount of time disappear, but in such a more fulfilling way, where it's about turning up that attention and zeroing in just on what's happening on my screen. So good pick, Rob. I'm right there with you on this one. I didn't pick it as my game of the year, but only because I played it once before.
Yeah, I can't. Year. Yeah, the trick that you got to experience, I was like, well, maybe I shouldn't kill him this time because it would be more fun to be surprised. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's beautiful. It's in like the 10B because it's like, I really enjoyed playing it. But like, there's a reason I haven't beat the final boss. It's like, yeah, okay, like I did it. Like, I could go finish this, I guess, but I've already experienced this. And so,
I will say that the way that Rob described the thing that hooked him for him was like the first time where I felt like there might be an inroad to Demon's Souls for me. I am also a player very similar to Rob. Rob and I have a similar taste in games where I like the experience of just dumping like 3 good hours into something and slowly, very, very slowly watching myself get a tiny bit better at it. Like, that sense of tension feels similar to like a Dwarf Fortress tension for me, or what I'm really digging about Paraspora right now, which is like, I will set myself a goal and then like 3 hours later I'll reach it.
Totally. Yeah. That's totally the way you can play Demon's Souls. And like, I think that unlocking that particular mode of play in your own brain instead of the sort of like, I have to go forward. And instead saying like, all right, I'm going to try to find a shortcut. That's like, if I can find a shortcut tonight, that's progress for me. Or I'm just going to grind some health items, or I'm just going to try to upgrade the sword tonight. If I can upgrade the sword tonight, then I've done it. That feels really good.
It's a stereotype to say like, it feels like scaling a mountain. But I do mean this in sort of the like, playing Demon's Souls for me has felt like undertaking a series of expeditions, not just like playing levels. Like, the way I'm approaching a lot of these spaces is like, okay, I need to master this part of the slope, right? Like, as long as these guys are a major challenge where it's kind of a crapshoot if I'm going to get through them cleanly, then I'm not really going to progress because I'm going to burn through too many resources clearing this early area. This is where I ended up with the Isle of Storms, where like I was having such inconsistent results with fighting the early skeleton dudes. And people were like, well, you really need to figure out like oh, do you realize that like button presses plus movement changes your attack animation and like your character will do something different. And I hadn't totally pulled together that I was in complete control of that. And so the realization that like, oh shit, like I can control spacing this way now. And that was a complete game changer, but it meant the next thing I had to do was get real comfortable at mastering that kind of footwork. And okay, so how do these first few encounters go? How does that go? Then I can move on to the next area. Where's the shortcut I can unlock? And that's really satisfying too. I think if the game were just about eating shit and then like getting beat on by a boss that you struggle to reach and then being like, well, I guess I have to do that again until I figure it out, I think I wouldn't like this. But that aspect of it where you get to know the territory really well and say like, okay, here's how I'm going to break this into chunks intellectually and figure out like how to put these stages together. And then I can start working on like the final run through this area. It's just inordinately satisfying.
Yeah.
Nothing else like it for me.
Great choice, Rob. Well, thank you for starting us off with a bang.
We won.
Awesome. Yeah, game of the year for me.
Rob's in the pod. We don't need to talk anything else. Rob picked demons. Cool. We're good. Mission accomplished for 2020.
God.
I'm safe, healthy, and Rob likes Demon Soul.
We made it through 2020. Who wants to go next?
Who's can you itching? Help me decide?
Yeah.
What sure. Are you, that can be part of the process. Yeah. Let's go. Okay. Lay out so, this. It's Crusaders and Hades, right?
In Animal Crossing.
Oh, okay. Animal Crossing.
I mean, Animal Crossing, the thing is, like, I think what I'm going to pick is Hades. And I think this is the reason why. Crusader Kings and Animal Crossing are really great games that were really emotionally important for me this year. But I don't know when I'm going to play them again next. And I am like seconds away from just playing Hades nonstop every single day. Like the longer time goes on, I'll have moments where like I'm not playing Hades right now. I'm checking out other games. But I feel like Hades is a game that has been like a real like a place for me to return to. Mm-hmm. But then there's also like Crusader Kings is just this incredibly massive and beautiful experience. Like it is such a web of just like actual what feels like real humanity after a while, where it feels like characters are just actually real living people. I just keep thinking back to Rob the Fox from our stream, so where good. Just we had these incredible experiences with his children, just yeah. like trying to make Succession work, or like moments in Crusader Kings I've had where I mentioned this in my review, I think, but I ended up marrying my granddaughter to who would the character that would be the heir to the entire empire, meaning that my dynasty would then like have some stake in that. Mm-hmm. And then before they became of age and could ascend the throne, an aunt I'd never heard of came in and murdered them both. And I was just like, yeah, like moments damn. Like that, narrative experiences, I don't know.
It feels like
I've had. You know?
It feels like there are three options here that mean different things for what game of the year might mean for you.
Yeah.
In that, like, the Crusader Kings thing feels almost, not that it isn't, like, emotional or something like that, but there is a degree of, like, stepping back and looking at this machine that works wonders and being like, I should reward the thing that is an accomplishment in design and programming. Not that Animal Crossing and that Hades don't have those things, but, like, when you mm-hmm. look at Crusader Kings 3 and go, wow, like, God made wonders, God made Crusader Kings 3. That's, you know, it's like, wow, this is incredible. But then you look at your relationship to something like Animal Crossing or Hades, and it sounds like, especially with Hades, that's something that you return to all year. You started even before the year having played it in early access, but then through this year, it became a place to return to and yeah. a place where you felt some, like, you
Animal
know,
Crossing's music made you cry.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that it was going to make me cry. Like, I didn't know it was that important to me until I heard the music. And I was just like, this game, when I was feeling so low, rescued me from just, like, the horror of 2020, uh-huh. you know? But, like, also, I feel like part of me wants to pick Hades because it feels like it splits the difference between all three of these options. Right. Where, like, Hades is a mechanical wonder. I think it is yeah. It's the best game that Supergiant has ever designed. It is the ultimate expression of their skill as designers to the point where it made me enjoy a roguelike game, a genre of game I notoriously do not like.
Right.
It was the game I played before I moved in with David, right? You know, when I was just sitting around in my apartment thinking about how much I missed him, even though he lived a literal 10-minute walk away from me. I spent a month just not being able to talk to him or see him, you know, and that was like a very painful time. And I played Hades throughout that entire time. And Hades is a game about escaping hell.
Did you escape?
Yeah.
Have we escaped?
Yeah.
Yeah. Escaping, I mean, you don't escape hell in Hades either. You make hell a good place to be. And you do that by connecting with other people.
Damn. If only we could learn that lesson in real life, huh? Shit.
That we live in hell and we can never leave? Yeah. Like, that
one. Yeah, let's pull ourselves up from the blood again and again and get a tip from Hypnos, where he basically insults you by saying some shit you know. Hypnos know I shouldn't let...
Hypnos is just my Twitter mentions, man. Damn, did you try dodging? Shit.
You tried not hitting the guys with shields in their shields? Did you? Yeah, dude, I tried. There are four of them. What do you want from me? God damn.
The poison got you? Every time he talks about how the satyr's poison gets you, I am like, shut the fuck up, Hypnos. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to talk about that poison.
God. Anyway, no, I think that makes sense now. I think that idea of splitting the difference with Hades adds up to me. I think that's...
Yeah.
I can't vote for your game of the year, but,
I think it is Hades. I'm giving myself the right to change my mind if I do, but the more I think about it, and then I guess this is where Patrick joins the conversation, is like, I just think Hades was the game that defined video games for me and had the place they hold in my life in this year.
Yeah, it's Hades is so fascinating to me because I don't know that I, like we talked about in a different podcast talking through the year where I was like, I'm still angry that I didn't like Doom Eternal more than I did, but because how much I liked the original Doom and thought, oh, that's like where that sequel will go and I'll like it even more probably. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the game I was most disappointed in this year was probably Spelunky 2, which is not to say it's a bad game, but mm-hmm. from the moment I saw that game, the first time I played it, like I already kind of had in my head, like, I think I already know how I feel about this without having seen any more of it, which is that, you know, to, you know, steal the common, you know, mountain like analogies. Like I did that. Like I did Spelunky and it was super satisfying. I will always look back on that experience, but I don't know that I want to do it again in that format and not enough is different. And I'll probably get around to it when it comes to Switch and maybe I'll change my mind. But like the 5 hours I played was like, yeah, okay. What's up? You're Spelunky too. And Hades came around at the same time hitting 1.0, in which I was finally like, cool, I'm gonna spend my time playing this. And it just scratched all the exact same itches, which is getting into a world that is punishing and mysterious and weird and just bashing your head into it over and over again. And one of my favorite part of the reason I really like the Souls games, but I like roguelikes, is the invisible progress, in which you can't tangibly sit down and say, oh, over the course of these 2 hours, I've accomplished anything. Because I haven't beaten the game. I haven't really unlocked anything. And especially in a roguelike where you're playing the same material over and over again, you may not be able to like sit down and put in a notebook, hey, like this is what I learned on this Hades run today while, you know, the Americans played in the background. But, you know, 6 hours later, put together the run, I'm not watching the Americans, but I'm doing that as like a way to remind myself that I should go back and watch that at some point. I watched the first one.
I was like, something to have the Americans on in the background. I was like, okay.
I don't know why I should have considered anything dirtbag. Watchmen, Lovecraft Country. I could have picked a show that I was actually watching. That one just came to mind to just like hit myself in the face that you should watch past like the first four episodes of the first season.
By the time that like 600 people email us asking where you are in the Americans, you'll be like, oh yeah, I should probably watch the fucking Americans.
And so when I wrote a piece about this, about why Hades was one of the most satisfying experiences that I had this year playing games, was when I went from, I beat the game once, and then I think I died one more time, and then I beat the game 8 times in a row. Like I just, then I did it where you get to like the credit ending before you can do the epilogue stuff. And it's just, looking back on that is such a strange experience, because I went from like constantly dying to the first boss every time, getting so mad when you're facing one of the original sisters and like the one that like locks you into smaller arenas, being like, great, yes, like I'm just going to die to this one, or I'm going to come out so weak that the rest of the run isn't going to matter. And now it's just like, go fuck yourself. Like, I'm going to walk in here and I'm going to crush any of you that come in. Like, oh, I have a weird build. Doesn't matter. I'll figure it out. And just spinning those off and then looking back and realizing over the course of that 25, 30 hours, whatever it is, how much progress did happen without me being able to map it in the way that traditionally when I play games is I like to play things with discrete objectives of like accomplish this, do this, and I can look back. And even like a Demon's Souls or a Dark Souls, like you beat a boss, right? And it's like, cool, like that is a mark of progress. And like because of my limited time and also just the way my brain is wired, that's what I find so satisfying about games. But I also find that invisible progress really satisfying when you can look on the lay of the land of how far you've come over those hours. And Hades just did that for me. It gave me all the feelings I get from a Souls game, a Spelunky, and just to get to the top of that mountain and be like, this fucking rules. I feel like I have mastered this game. I've never felt compelled to go back. I will absolutely when they do whatever like expansion, and I'll be excited to come back and do it. But it's so interesting to play a game and then feel released from it. Like I got to that, I got to the end. I looked up the video of the epilogue and I was like, I've never picked it up. I've hovered over the icon and then I recently uninstalled it so I could make more room on my Switch because I feel like I've done it. I've made my peace with Hades and I can move on to other things. But that time that I spent in September, October was like, I was excited to sit down and like, yeah, let's watch a TV show. Like, I'm not going to go sit in my office and like separate from my wife. I mean, we have discrete time where we make sure we're together each night, but like, I would like, yeah, fuck it. Let's watch another episode. Like, I don't need to go down there. Like, I got this Hades thing. And I remember the first night that I beat Hades, the final boss, we were watching an episode and my hands were sweating and I was so excited, but I didn't, despite having been with my wife for moving on into a second decade fairly soon, I did not have the courage to like fully express myself in that moment and explain why I was so excited. I mean, I did. I was like, she's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I just beat this boss. It was just, but like, I wanted to like get up on the couch and like,
God.
So anyway.
That's pretty much the same, like, kind of joy that this game gave me. Like, I was, before we were with David, like, that was, like, we got to the point where he would stand at the bottom of my stoop, and I would stand at the top of my stoop, and we would have conversations. We would just, like, cry at each other, essentially, because we couldn't touch each other. We didn't know what we could do.
That was in the UPS packages show up, and you're wondering, do I need to put this somewhere for 48 hours? And oh no, I'm washing all of my fruit with dish soap to clean it off.
Those were those hours of the pandemic before we understood like what the scope and scale of the virus was. But like during that time, like engaging in that world and then being able to set my own goals in the game and to also to have a sense of time passing, because that was also like a huge issue at that part of the pandemic. Your time just got compressed and expanded in very strange ways. Like that became like such a marker for me of like how my life and my experience of the world. And like not only that, but the game, like Supergiant's always been very good, I think, at giving players emotional payoffs for gameplay progress. But this game is all built around that feeling of invisible progress, I think, where it gives you a lot of different kinds of ways to show you how the world has changed since you've started playing the game and like the mark that you've left on it. And then also like the way I remember also my experience of dying to the Fury sisters constantly, just over and over and over and over and over, like, and like feeling like I would never beat them and feeling like I could never get better at this game. And now, and then the moment when I like realized for myself that like that boss fight no longer scared me, or even, I think even more so, is the moment when I started reliably being able to beat Theseus and the bull.
Oh, yeah, no, that was it for me, too. That's when, like, the game, like I realized I had cracked the egg. I was like, Hades is oozing out of this egg. And I'm going to lick it up, as it turns out. But it was, that's when, like, the game's secrets sort of like, oh, like, I have, once I figured out that boss, everything else was just a matter of, we'll just do this a little bit more and you'll be fine. Like that boss is, I consider mastering that boss to be the final boss of Hades on a skill level, because usually you come out of that just licking your wounds and then you get to some poison and you make a mistake in the final area and it's just all over. Whereas once you come out of there and you're just like, man, like the occasional like 1 out of 4 times that you get the Minotaur first and it's like, buddy, just no, let's not do this. Like, make it easier on yourself. Like, have someone else here to help you.
Yeah.
God. That's really when the game shifts.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, at that point also is when I started doing things that I don't normally do in games. Like, I was a child who was in gifted programs and absolutely have that complex about not being able to do things unless I'm good at them immediately. And right. I was horseshit at Hades, like, for a very
Everyone
long time.
Is. I mean, like, I played, you know, I consider this to be a genre in which I have... Part of the reason I like playing them is like I've developed a certain like foundational confidence that, okay, yeah. I don't know what the I feel around with my hands. I don't know what the rules are here, but like I know I'm good at platformers and action games and I know my fingers mm-hmm. are going to respond. And like I have like a baseline of confidence. Whereas like this sounds like a game that like helped you, like that doesn't come out of nowhere. That comes yeah. out of like a game's need to help you get there for you to have the confidence to try them or other ones like it. And it yeah. sounds like, you know, I think the legacy of Hades will be, look, you can make a game that is satisfying to like the high end, like the high skill ceiling players, and also doesn't forget folks who might be interested. And this is like a great critique of like the Souls games in general. Like I wish yeah. those games do have some of that stuff, but I wish they had more because I think there are just larger groups of people that would get into those games and then cast aside those like kind of guardrails in favor of like where they. What they enjoy once they have that foundational knowledge. But Hades just does such a terrific job yeah. of identifying, you know, I bet more people would like this game if it just, it's not even a holding hand. It's just, it's structural. It's like for you, the invisible progress isn't invisible. They find ways of marking it and talking about it. And that yeah. is a way as a player feeling like, oh, that 45 minutes wasn't wasted because, and it's not just a conversation tree. It's all sorts of tiny little things that mark like that a goalpost like moved forward, even if it's not, you know, triggering the end credits. And, yeah. and Souls games could do that better, and Hades did it very well.
I would make it like a goal for myself to get to certain like stages of the game. Like I'll be like, okay, I got to make it to Elysium because I want to further the plot line between right. Patroclus and like and then that would become the point of the game for me rather sure. than like beating it, you know, rather than this like really intense obsession with like becoming the best kind of player. I would have
or I want this I one upgrade like okay, you know yeah. what, like I want better rare drops, so I'm gonna focus on the weapon that gives me like, you know, the yeah. bonuses on this certain drop, and I'm gonna that's gonna be this run. So
yeah.
if it doesn't go well because I don't like this particular weapon, that's great because I just wanted 200 items
yeah,
that I
yeah,
can
exactly.
dump into this upgrade because yeah. that's like a small stepping stone on like the larger path that I'm that
I would
I'm climbing.
Open the game, just go into the prophecy list and be like, which ones of these do I think I can complete today? And just try to do them. And that was incredibly satisfying.
That became yeah. really fun on the yeah. subsequent like runs where I like internalized the skill arc. And then it was like, okay, I want to do more of these prophecies. Even though this isn't what I want in my build, I'm just mm-hmm. going to go with the game as saying like, you could help fulfill a prophecy if you didn't.
yeah.
And
I was like,
and on some level it became like an extra challenge. It's like, okay, this is going to spoke my build in a direction that I wasn't kind of planning for, but it often resulted in just very strange ways of playing that yeah. ended up being satisfying all on their own
yeah.
because ultimately the designers of Supergiant are so smart that like, you almost are never going to run into a build that is completely broken. It might not be yeah. to your particular skill set, but there's a reason they're marking those things. And if you just generally trust them, you will often end up with something that, if not results in you beating the game, you have just an interesting experience that was worth
yeah.
having. And then maybe you get the prophecy fulfilled, which gets you a bunch of items, which gets mm-hmm. you an upgrade. And then like yep. the whole like loop is just filled in again.
Yeah. And it's even fun just to like, I would sometimes just like pick two trinkets. Like I'll be like, okay, I'll start off with the trinket of this guy. And then when I get to the next stage, I'll pick the trinket of this god. And then
right.
just try to only pick boons from like a couple of different gods. And like just seeing how these effects played with each other. Like I really love doing, because of the mythology, the Greek mythology.
I'm on
I
my
love
phone.
Doing,
Sorry.
Oh, we love
You're
you,
good.
Austin. And you love that
Apologies.
You're on your phone. I loved doing Athena and Ares. So in Greek mythology, Athena is also a goddess of war, but she's the goddess of wise, just war, where Ares is the god of just like war in a spirit of wanton slaughter. So his effects are all about doing much damage as possible, and her effects are all about shielding the player, and they're all defensive. So it was super fun to just like to see how it would force you to play when you are maximizing offense and defense in this really intense way. Or to do like, oh, I like doing lightning. Like, let's do Zeus and Poseidon because of their brothers who hate each other. And also like lightning and water. That sounds like a fun combo. And just seeing like what it would be like to play like that. It's a game that I enjoy being bad at. Like, I don't like being bad at things. And this is a game that has made me accept that I'm not good at everything. And also it's fun to learn. It's fun to learn to be better.
I agree. Yes. That's why Hades is my game of the year.
Hell yeah. We've solved video games. You don't need any more now. Nope.
Except maybe like an expansion to Hades. Like, but before we cancel video games, it's just like whatever that like winter expansion or some other whatever they're gonna do, like give me
then we can get rid of video games forever. Joe Biden will make video games illegal.
Joe Biden is gonna task From Software Sekiro expansion.
Yes, thank
as part
you.
Of a trade agreement. And you know, we're gonna be disappointed in Pete Buttigieg, but don't worry, we'll get that Sekiro add-on.
I cannot believe.
Yes, you can.
Oh, is that what Yes You Can was always supposed to be? Yes, you can believe this shit.
You can and you will.
We're in the promised land.
Yes, you can believe I will appoint a banker. Okay. Not that Pete is a banker, but just generally
Secretary of Transportation. Yeah,
Pete is transport, and I don't...
He's going to transport us to...
Always loved buses.
Loved trains. See, the thing is, Joe Biden does motherfucking love trains. And I was hoping that the one thing he would do some good shit for the trains in this country. But he appointed a small town mayor.
This is the thing. It's like, that place doesn't even have a subway, right?
No, it fucking does not.
It has buses,
South
presumably.
Bend, Indiana? It's a college town.
It's your definition it's a college of subway. Town. You get a sandwich.
You get a $5 foot long. Pete Buttigieg knows about
See, that's- That's what went wrong. It's like in his pitch meeting, Pete was like, look, we got a lot of subways and stuff in Indiana.
Yeah.
Joe got a little confused and was like, wow, this man really loves transportation.
Some friends of mine really worked on the bread prices of Subway. Don't worry about it.
Oh, shit.
It all links together.
Wow. Not surprising to see a rat in Subway, but.
Jesus Christ. All right. Should we move on to the final game? And I say that because I'm pretty sure Kato and I are aligned. I think it would be surprising. Break.
I'm successful.
We should take a break. Let's take a quick break. Good call, Rob. So let's take a quick break and we'll come back in a second.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back, and my voice should sound fine, but if there's any weirdness, it's because Spectrum Cable Internet does not want you to know the truth about Umurangi Generation. they don't want us to talk about how good it is. They cut off my internet.
Oh, God
they
damn.
Said, Austin, you're not allowed to talk about games you love.
The UN called them Spectrum.
Optimum said, not today.
Not today, motherfucker. I'm going to sneeze 1 second.
While we're waiting for him to sneeze, Rob just posted Mita pics in the chat.
Thank you for these great Mita pics.
Amazing.
This is important.
I'm going to die.
These are great. This is an adorable pop right here.
Well, just wait until we get the photographer shots we got.
Oh, my God.
Excuse me?
So this is how they get you.
Amazing. Yeah.
Okay, just I'm sorry, Austin. 1 second. Mm-hmm. We have to address this. So we donated to an animal charity, and one of the like sweeteners for that was people who donate will get some professional photographer shots of their pet, and this is all being done through the daycare where Mina goes, and the thing was you get three sort of gratis, and then you're all good, but of course you have the option, you know, if you don't just want three. You could buy more.
Ah, that's how they get
the options, you know?
Let me tell you, the real price of these things is ridiculous. And yet I'm like, you know, I mean, she's only going to be 1 year old puppy once. So sure. I think it almost behooves me to spend like $300 on a series of poster sized prints of my animal that I can hang on the living room wall.
Listen, that is worth so much more than $300. That was a bargain you got right there.
Especially like this guy put in work because Mina basically rioted throughout the photo shoot. Mm-hmm. She was like, I'm at daycare, where are the other dogs? And just like threw a tantrum. And so you wouldn't know that from the pictures. The pictures, she looks very happy and Muppet-like, but apparently she was an unholy terror.
Oh, of course.
That's the business model of like, yeah, you can have three free photos, but of course, then there's these other eight adorable pics. Do you want those to be lost like tears in the rain? And I'm like, no, I do not.
Wow. Absolutely. Oh, wait, so they take them first?
Yeah.
And then you have to decide? Yeah, oh, dude, that's cruel.
Dude,
that's cruelty.
You get like,
look,
like a spread.
20 shots of your pet looking just transcendent. Rob,
this is how all this works. This is how kids like year end of photos
work.
Fuck
that shit. No.
This is a racket.
We did ones as a family a year ago that we found out as we were purchasing the ones to the best photo to be taken as a family. You just can't have them without like the logo in the corner. Like you just have to have the insignia of the company.
No.
Like
can you pay extra? Is it just like a fortune to pay extra?
Oh, like $1,000 to have that. Right.
Oh, we love that.
Wait, what? Hold on.
We can't. We're not.
This is it. We're getting justice for the Klepiks.
My brain hurts. So wait, you buy the photo. The watermark is still there. What the fuck am I buying the photo for?
You're licensing the photo. Mm-hmm. For personal use.
No, you
like
just
a
get
car where
you just
get
like
borrowing
a
it from
with
the dealership
with a watermark, right? It's just a preview.
No,
preview has the watermark. The final photo
has the watermark.
Oh. Yeah, Patrick is saying the final photo. Unless you spend $1,000,
is it easy to crop out?
Yeah, that's what we ended up doing. And the pictures were so good that it was like.
I still feel like
Patrick's
what we should
trick.
Do is hire a fucking hacker and get
you
the originals.
Well,
I was going to say we need to hire a fucking button man and shut this guy down.
Shut it down. Stuff doesn't fly in my neighborhood.
One of Katie's best friends is a designer and can do anything in Photoshop. But nice. The next time, whenever next year we make it out to New York and I probably drag the family. Like, put a beer in front of Katie and then just bring up this story. Just like Patrick mentioned one time, she will.
Oh, I can't wait.
She'll talk
you
off.
Wait.
She has big thoughts on what occurred during that. It's a very good story.
Much
I'm
love
excited.
To Katie.
There's a lot more to it that I can't explain on this podcast, is what I'll say.
Oh, my gosh.
Ooh, okay. Secret stories.
I just get ready for fucking seeing high school senior photos, buddy. Like, you're going to have an experience. That is a scam and a half.
All right.
Speaking of photos.
Wow. Blame capitalism, honestly. If artists and photographers were paid more in general, maybe they wouldn't have to fucking run rackets in order to survive.
Uh-huh. That's fair. Which is, I think, part and parcel with Umurlangi Generation, one of the best games of the year. Definitely my favorite. Kato, I know you also had very strong feelings about it. I think the place for me to come in on it is touching on something that we already have talked about a lot here, which is attention. And like time, when I think about this game, it's easy. When I talk about this game, it's easy to just talk about it in really broad descriptive terms. It's a game where you're a photographer, you go between levels. It has lots of similarities with a walking simulator in that it's about looking around an environment, understanding storytelling through environmental storytelling details. And then it's sort of like that plus an interesting photography game in which you have the tools to take really interesting photos, but you're tasked with finding and taking kind of mundane ones, ones that will lead you around the level and force you to pay attention to things. But, you know, part of the sort of, I guess, thematic conceit with the game is that you're being paid to do kind of rote work instead of tinkering and getting good shots. You're just being paid to, like, go find the word cops and take a photo of it. Go find three feathers and take a photo of it. And that's like one way to talk about this game. For me, the other way to talk about this game is that partially because what I wanted to do was unlock all of the bonus photography stuff that you get through the course of doing all the side objectives, and partially because I just loved the level so much, I spent hours exploring this game, even though it's something that once you know where everything is, you could theoretically speed run it in like, you know, under an hour easily. But I spent so much time in these places looking for the film canisters, but also just taking photos, discovering new things about the world, discovering new things about the people there. I guess we should say outright that we are going to talk spoilers. The previous segments talked a little bit about some spoilery stuff. We talked about one of the bosses in Demon Souls, and obviously we talked about like some beats in Hades. But
also every time we've talked about this game, we've even dodged the premise, which we have to say now, right?
Which is, this is a game, you know, Umurangi means, red sky. I believe Kata, you said it's a Maori word predating the recent fires. You know, the creator of the game made this game in response to the wildfires, which lit the skies red. And this is a game about the end of the world, and in a very specific way. It's a game about giant monsters and giant mechs fighting, and you are at the very, very bottom of it all. You are regular people. You're a regular person trying to make their way through it. Seeing the machinations and politics and
machinations, please.
Sorry, the machinations is actually right. Because, you know, the first few levels of this game, you start getting small things. You get like, hey, what are these like fighter jets doing flying over?
Why does the game keep yelling at me when I take pictures of these blue blobs that are everywhere?
Yeah, there's like little blue jellyfish, basically. Like it says, don't do that. Don't take a photo of them. And then, you know, you see people dancing, you see people in the street, you go to a couple of different places. Hey, there's a lot of like discussion of some sort of first wave of attacks. You see shrines to people who were lost seemingly in a war. Then you find, you know, there's specifically graffiti that says like so-and-so was lost. She saved us from the kaiju. And you're like, oh, word. Oh, word.
Kaiju. Okay.
Oh, the kaiju. Like a euphemism? K-A-I-J-U sort of thing?
And then you get that level where you return to this kind of, it's almost like a tower or like a bird's nest or something. Like not literally a bird's nest, but like a military base that's up on a platform. And you'd been there once before, and it's just like gray, drab place where people are like, you know, the UN soldiers smoking in their barracks, and you have, you know, you and your friends just kind of like looking out at the sunset, and you go back there at night when it's under attack, and in the dark, you know, under the tracer fire, you see shapes beginning to move. And you're like, oh shit, no, that's a kaiju. That's a giant jellyfish thing. And the little blue guys are everywhere on the, like, you know, spread across the ground. And people are yelling and people are in pain. And suddenly this game takes a real turn as the rest of the levels end up being about escaping that attack trying to you as the player, I think, make sense of what is going on around you. You know, eventually you see a counterattack with like three. Like, it's just Ava units 1, 2, and 3, you know, 1, 2, and 3 basically going to 100%. Fight this thing 100%. Being on a train trying to get away from it, which is a fantastic level. Patrick, you talked about that level a few times on the podcast.
Yeah, I think it's my favorite one because it has the most sort of like dense amount of storytelling.
It's so good.
In a single space, whereas none of the levels are particularly, well, the DLC, of which I played most of, it didn't get quite to the end last night, has much more expansive areas. It's fine if we spoil that, Kato. Like, it's, okay, I talked about it.
We have to.
I tried really hard. I made it past the swamps and then looked up how much there was to go. And I was like, I got so close, but it was 12:15 and that's my bedtime. But
that's fair.
But like, even in the large spaces, there is still a density to the storytelling that is really impressive.
Yeah. And then so to kind of spoil the main game, basically, you get to the final full level is you're back on the rooftop from the beginning of the game. Yeah. The three mechs are on one side of the screen and there's another unit on the far right. And you're taking photos of that first space, but now it's been kind of turned into this battleground. And then you get this incredible slow walk through the ruins until you see this like living godlike creature up on a tower. It is the most like end of Ava shit. Like, Patrick, I'm so glad in retrospect that we watched Ava so you could pull from those touchstones while playing this, despite everything.
I still love the imagery of that show. Yeah, how I feel about the characters.
So like, and that was already probably my game of the year for a lot of reasons, which is this is a game that interrogates the idea of like what to do at the end of the world, what to do when the world is in crisis. And it feels like your things are hopeless, and it has this kind of like, it's not optimism. It's not like, well, obviously we can get through this if we pull together. Mm-hmm. But it is a sort of like refusal, like an angry refusal to give up on the things we already love, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Kato, I don't know how you feel about that. Just talking about the main game here.
No, definitely. I think in some ways, the way that it kind of shifts in that last level to, obviously, like, you're getting paid throughout for, like, every picture that you take, which really kind of centers this idea of, like, survival. And then there's obviously the turn at the end where it's, like, you're not sure if you're going to survive this, but you still take a photograph because the kind of the act of creation, of picture making, of picture taking is still a creative one. And, you know, you're going to have that creative impulse no matter what. And it's like the game has come to an understanding of like there's a finality here. You maybe tried. You're not sure if how much you were like kind of stamped out. But like what was important ends up being kind of that you don't. It's like you lose hope for the world continuing, or you lose hope for the people. You lose hope for the people in power paying attention to you is really what it feels like in that base game. It's like you can see the kind of the difference between like average people's reactions to what is happening. And
which is like going to VR arcades, watching movies about the kaiju attacks and the first wave, which you only kind of hear about a little bit.
Right.
But like, you know, there's the signs of people kind of burrowing their heads in the ground. I don't want to say like it's judgmental about that necessarily.
No.
But it like there's a degree to which what it's judgmental about is going into isolation. I think there's lots of like, here's your gamer palace, go into your gamer palace and ignore everything. I think that it sees that as capitalism's response, or positions that as capitalism's response to crisis.
Absolutely.
Just to commodify trauma, right?
Right.
And to like turn it around and turn it into movies, give people a way to bury their heads and not want to resist what's happening. Because the other angle of what's going on throughout all these levels is that the UN has come here. Also, we should say that this game takes place I always struggle with the pronunciation of Maori words, but Aotearoa, which is the Maori word for the land that became New Zealand, or was eventually settled as New Zealand. It's as much about the kaiju attacks as it is about the UN occupying this space and effectively colonizing it and becoming the de facto authority, you know, pushing away local governance. So I do think that there is a world, or a way in which this game is immediately talking about that stuff in a way that very few games are. And it's not especially didactic, because it's all just done through environmental storytelling. It's done through, again, movie advertisements, businesses.
So much of the world building is both avoidable and also like, if the game puts so much trust in the player, or just says, look, like, maybe you just like taking the cool photos and like, look, there's a kaiju. Like a lot of the seriousness that the two of you are, and I echo in what the game is imbued with, is also like eminently ignorable, and you can just play it as, this is a bunch of really cool photography tools and there's some robots. I mean, some of the stuff is like you can't ignore, like, you know, there's a soldier or you know, someone who was hurt, but like there is the game puts all that, like, there's, you know, the implication that like, well, yeah, there's still capitalism here, but like all the rich people left and went to Mars. Like they said, fuck Earth. Like, and the only reason you know that is because there's a poster that says like, hey, they left for Mars. Like, you know, what I mean? Like,
totally,
and what you can extract from there is like a whole, you know, what a most other games would have a whole side quest with dialogue, or an audio log that would be like, and my parents, you know, they managed to get a ticket to bars, but like I didn't. They left me behind. Fuck capitalism. Go home. They went to Mars.
I think trust in the player is the exact thing I would describe that. Like it, there is narrative elements that are unavoidable in this game, and that you will just see because like you have to see them because that's like part of the game is looking at the environment and understanding it and interpreting it. But it does, it relies on the player to become curious rather than the game foisting this stuff upon you. You don't walk around listening to audio logs from people. You don't have side quests. You just, you know, you see something and you're like, huh. And the image just sticks in your mind and you have to go back and figure out what it means. And the clues are all there if you look at the world long enough, but that it's not going to, it is going to trust you to seek them out yourself. Yeah. Rather than forcing you to engage with it.
Even the objectives that you do have are never those bits of the game, right? Like the photos that you're like you have to take in order to like progress are always like adjacent to or not even that close to like the specific kind of world building elements, but what they do is they force you to kind of look more, right?
Yeah.
You have to be in that mode of investigation.
Like, it could have been easy to see this game take the
find what you need anyway.
Sorry?
I said, yeah, you have to be in that mode of investigation to find what you are.
Where's the
to
word dump?
Right.
Oh, look at this poster about yada yada. Right, like, that's the entire way the game forces you into like seeing what it is put up everywhere and to realize that the posters are not just there because they're
and
like just fancy.
Then you're supposed
art.
To ignore it. You're supposed to be like, well, no, this isn't Three Feathers. I'm not supposed to, I'm wasting my time by reading this stuff.
Right.
And I think that it's important to set all that up because the DLC macro steps hard in the other direction, especially in the final level, which I wish you had gotten to, Patrick.
I get it.
But the idea that you could look away is rejected wholeheartedly. So macro kicks off and you're like, I don't know when this is. I don't know what's going on necessarily. But you're looking at a bunch of other spaces.
There's no setup. We should say like you play, like the way like the there's like a when you go to like your missions, there's like a slider that you can move that shows all the different levels because there's plenty of reason you would want to like go back and do side objectives or take a different cool photo with like new tools that you've unlocked like later in the game. And then it's just like, you know, you get this, there's a question mark that's for like the very cool cool and sad, I guess, end of the the original game. And then just like more. And it's just like, go to Gamer Paradise. And it's like, okay. But like with no sense of like where this fits. Like there's a very definitive end to or seemingly definitive end to the original base game. I don't know where things go in the DLC on the timeline necessarily.
Well, we'll talk about it because Kato, I think, cracked it in a way that I did not necessarily. The levels in that DLC take you through a bunch of other places in terms of their relationship to the main world. So like, yes, do you go into Gamer's Paradise? Is that what that first level is?
Yeah, something
it's
like
a big arcade with Gamer's Palace. Yeah. Which has like little arcade booths. It took me a while to figure this out, but have just little pods underneath them. It's like crawling into the bottom of an arcade cabinet to be your little VR hole.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And, there's a dance club. And then in most of the levels.
There's a shark DJ who is wearing a VR helmet.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Of course, DJ Tariq, right?
He's the shark, yep.
Yeah, Tariq.
Which, like,
Who shows up in a previous level, by the way, in the music. There's that the train level, Patrick, in the main game.
Uh-huh.
He's constantly coming on the radio to be like, he has a robot voice, and is like, this is DJ Tariq, and I say, fuck the UN, or whatever. You know, that's, like, who he is. It's great. I love fucking Tariq so much. And so, yeah, you get to meet – also, I think it's a dolphin. I'm pretty sure it's a dolphin.
Oh, yeah, might be right. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's like a Johnny Mnemonic dolphin shout out.
Hell yeah.
but like there's just like cool dancing people in that level and everything's great. And then you walk through a door and the tone changes. This happens in most of the levels, right, Kato?
Right. Like most of the DLC, there's always like a kind of flip at some point that shifts the perspective on what is happening or what the tone of the place is. Like inside Gamer's Palace, you've obviously got the fucking booming like techno music, just people dancing, there's people in VR like laying out on couches in like a VIP area with like drinks all over, and then you go up the stairs and you exit for a second, and of course you're going to lose the music when you do that. But the kind of sound design here is so starkly different from the inside that you understand this kind of divide, because your friends who there's always these four characters that are your friends that are in every level that seem to be just kind of tagging along with you wherever you're going to take these photos. Your friends are outside, and you, for me, it kind of definitely felt like the stark understanding of, like, oh, okay, this is not a space that you're normally allowed into. You can go in because you're on assignment, right? You're doing a job. Yeah,
you're
here.
You're there to do photos. Your friends are waiting for you outside.
Yeah, yeah. This is a space though for the upper class, right? Like immediately outside. There's like, a bunch of other people that aren't dressed as well, I guess you would say, or dressed differently than the people who are inside.
Yeah.
It's
a bunch of businessmen getting drunk and dancing 100%. With people and hanging out with like Playboy bunny girls with neon ears and shit. And the news is on, but like no one's paying attention to it. And it's just, yeah, it's a very cool level. And I think that repeats, right? You know, there's a level where you're in a UN hangar and you get a real good close up of all the mechs, including one that is clearly integrated with one of the big blue jellyfish kaiju.
That bit was great too. You had to find a key to actually open the like second hangar. And then once you get in there, there is one of the monsters like kind of wrapped itself fully around one of the other kaiju.
Is that how you read that? I was reading it in that Ava way of like, is that at the heart of each of these things?
They're making them out of the thing. Shit.
Yeah.
I could totally see that. Yeah, no, totally.
I mean, who knows, right?
Either way, it's bad. There's one of these kaiju inside the fucking base. Like,
Oh, yeah. Not good.
There's something tonally that struck me about Umurangi Generation that I think that the DLC, which I haven't played yet, which I plan to play, but just haven't yet, That touches on for me. I remember I was an intern. It just reminds me of graduating college, this incredibly expensive and ridiculous thing that we forced young people to do right after the financial crisis. I entered college in 2008. And then by 2012, nothing really had gotten better. So you just enter the world with this sense of hopelessness. And I remember, working, interning at an art gallery and working these gala events. And I'd look around and everyone at the silent auction dinner is this wealthy white person eating this delicious food, looking at this incredible, beautiful art that came from artists I truly admire. And then I'd go sit in the back room with the service staff and just be like, this is, I don't know if I'll ever escape this, but this is it. I'm feeding my creative impulse in a world that doesn't accept me at all.
Right. Totally. Yeah. So this DLC builds and builds. You see some other spaces that are like, kind of resistant groups that are setting up, underground, because you're basically underground this whole game, or the whole DLC. And then the final level is so distinct from everything else you've played. First of all, because your friends, instead of sitting in one place waiting to be photographed, follow you around the entire time. And secondly, because it's an active protest against the occupation of the UN. The level is like covered in graffiti. People are helping, people
Should
who've
I click
been tear
gassed. Now or are you,
yeah, you can go ahead and click it. You can go ahead and click it. I sent a link of just like this person playing through. I have the volume down. I'm sure someone is talking in this playthrough. But there's graffiti everywhere, and you can click around going forward a little bit too.
It to the final level. Fuck.
Yeah.
Was this the final? Did you get here? You got here?
Yeah. And then
you're
just so like,
close.
Oh, there's probably two more levels. Like I'm.
No, this is the final level. So it's just a long level. In some ways. So you're at this protest. People are moving around. There are bottles of water for clearing people's eyes out of tear gas. There are Molotov cocktails. There's like a little bit of an umbrella stand, not an umbrella stand, but like an umbrella wall set up in certain places. And it's a snapshot of the protests that have happened across the world in various situations. And it pulls very clearly from that material and has like very... Again, like most of this game is not super didactic about its politics. It's easy to miss them. It is impossible to miss them here, including a particular jab at Watch Dogs, the game Watch Dogs. If you wanted a spineless look at what's going on, play fucking Watch Dogs or some shit, says a piece of graffiti on the wall. And so you go around, you take your photos. Instead of getting money here, you're getting social media shares and likes. And instead of getting, instead of being penalized when you take pictures of the blue bottles, the little jellyfish, you get penalized whenever you take a photo of a protester's face in full view. Mm-hmm. And so it continues, and then you get all your pictures, and it says like, hey, it's time to like storm the UN's building, basically. So if you jump ahead to 4:17-ish, I guess, that's about where it is. You storm forward to the UN's kind of structure where there's a big building.
Oh, shit!
Uh-huh. And what's revealed is the sky around you is fake. The red, like, stoplights come on that look like just look like the computers from – it just looks like the Magi from Ava.
Yeah,
and in the place of the UN's original kind of office building, one of these giant mechs comes forward and – leans forward over every – leans is the wrong word – lunges forward, covering what's left of the sky. And police come out and start beating people. And, like, mm-hmm. you are taking photos of this police kind of, attack on the protests. And then you're escaping with your friends. And it's also the first time in the game you get to take a selfie. I don't know, Kata, did you notice that?
Yeah, right at the end.
During the final end bit, when you try to take a photo, it becomes a selfie. So you get to see the character's face for the first time. And it's just like, it's, I did not expect, this is a game that's very passive in its presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And so for it to take such a hard swing here at the final, on the final stage, to say very directly, like, the weapons that the state says are going to be used to protect you are also weapons that it will bring to bear against you when you critique it, when you demand things from it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways in which it shows members of the UN who, you know, you'd previously seen, lounging at the barracks, smoking a cigarette, playing a board game, crying in some cases.
Eating lunch.
So quickly turned against you is so fucking effective. And from top to bottom, it ends up being a game that I think I said this on Twitter before I played this level, that I can't think of a game that better speaks to 2020 from 2020. And I think that is all the more clear here, the fact that it builds to something so dramatic. And so, you know, I think there's probably a critique to be made about, you know, instrumentalizing the protests in this way. But I would so much rather art that wants to engage with it in this very direct way instead of stuff that kind of dances around it like the way Watch Dogs Legion does, where, like, it feels toothless because it can't be specific. Whereas here it's very much specifically – and there's other things that make this very specific, right? There are lots of traditional Maori elements, whether that's, particular icons and art, or there's a weapon in one of the levels where it's like, take a picture of a sledgehammer, an axe, and then a – I had to look it up because it's one of those words, like, I don't know what this word means. And I was like, oh shit, this is like a traditional piece of kind of Maori culture. And that was like a really
and they have a laser
interesting
version
way.
Of it.
And they have a sick laser version of it.
Yeah. It's fucking great.
Because fuck it. Why not?
I mean, just watching
the Taiaha is what it's called.
Watching this after having gone to protest, and I'm not claiming that I was like really in the shit or anything. I was too scared to stay out past curfew because I am afraid of being in physical pain. Well, it's like this is, I mean, it emotionally captures the feeling that I had this summer that I have not really seen media really. It's difficult to capture the feeling of being at a protest, especially one limb where like you are surrounded by people who are completely on your side. Like we would walk, we would march down these streets and like people would lean out their buildings cheering for us. Bus drivers, we walked past a bus and there was a MTA employee in it just watching us and sobbing, you know, like out of happiness. And that was the kind of reception we had in the face of a mayor and a governor who clearly wanted us all to be beaten and arrested like that. He deliberately, Mayor de Blasio, I remember talking to Heather Alexandra about how she had to hide in a bush one night trying to get back from Williamsburg, you know, like these, the feeling of the state being against you, it is so clearly captured in these moments. And I'm so impressed that the game went here. And one other thing that I would just want to say for people who do go to protests, like straight up actually do, just don't take pictures of protesters' faces. Just don't do it. Please stop doing that. Please don't do it.
Yeah. it is like it is such an obvious, you know, symbol that is easy to read and not particularly subtle. But like this game ends with a statue of a mech holding an American flag, kind of shrinking into the background as an actual American mech shows up to threaten a bunch of, you know, much, much, much weaker human protesters to just stand over them and glower at them mm-hmm. and kind of like say, listen, you can't win this fight, which leads to, Kato, I think, your theory yeah. about when this all takes place, right?
Yeah, it absolutely, for me, kind of crystallized both what was happening in the original game and where this takes place. Because for me, this reads like a prequel to the base game, where the reason that you and your friends are kind of, a lot of the locals and a lot of the kind of communities you see in the base game seem to be ignoring or just like trying, like they're dancing in the streets, they're doing whatever and like kind of ignoring the shit falling down around them. And I kind of assumed, given how they had positioned the UN, that it's like, okay, the UN is fucking up here. But this, to me, here is, you see this, and like they keep mentioning that this is the second wave of attacks. So the way mm-hmm. I read this is that this is happening during the first wave of attacks, and people see the UN come in and see the UN fucking up this defense and understand that the UN are not actually, you know, doing a good job or listening to the local population about how to deal with this issue. And
right, much of the graffiti is about how much damage is being caused to local communities, yeah. how many civilians have been killed in these attacks, basically.
And so then you get to the protest, and you understand that the people in the base game aren't necessarily ignoring the issue because there's nothing that they can do individually. It's more that they've tried to do something and the state crushed them. Right. There's yeah. no they've reached the point of no return. They understand that. And it's like they're trying to live out their last days. Like the state has already fucking said, no, we're not going to listen to you. So like all you can do at that point is try to, you know, enjoy what life you have left. And, you know, however you can survive until you can't anymore. Right. Like the DLC is definitely, to me, then set kind of previously to show that, like, yeah, they tried something for sure. And as is the case in a lot of times when you have like kind of state power thinking they have the correct solution, but the correct solution always hurts someone like further down the line that they're just like not worried about, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, it's kind yeah. of like the governor of your state going on a book tour and accepting an Emmy Award while cases of a deadly virus are rising, and he's uh-huh. not doing anything about it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. What are you supposed to do then? I mean, mutual aid, do video game streams, whatever the fuck you can.
Right.
Right.
That's it.
Right. 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 So yeah, Umurangi Generation completely impressed me this year. I thought it would be a fun diversion when it first came out. I thought it'd be like, wow, cool. Like I miss being in the city, and it does do that stuff too. But it is, you know, from its photography mechanics,
yeah.
you can lay down now. You can, with the DLC, you unlock the ability to lay down, which is sick, to take photos. But from that stuff through its environmental storytelling and its sense of style and culture. It is such a specific thing in a year in which I've played so many games meant to feel as general as possible.
Yeah.
Meant to feel like, hey, we don't want to, you know, scare people off. We want to appeal to everybody if possible. We want to make space for all perspectives or multiple perspectives. This is a single perspective, given motion, and I'm very, very happy with it. So shout outs, to the developers, shout outs to, the musician, because the music in this game fucking slaps so hard. Yeah. It's been with me all year, and yeah, I'm so happy to, in a year where I've been not happy about many things, this is one that I'm happy to just like yell from the rooftops about. If you have not played this game, please give it a look. At least there's a demo on Steam. Go fuck around with it, because I think it's worth your time.
It's coming to Switch. Shit, when is it coming to Switch? I feel like I should know this.
I think soon.
Yeah,
it hasn't been said.
Okay, they haven't said yet. Okay, but also, that will be coming if you have that, but don't have a PC necessarily. But
yeah, yeah, Totally. Also, it looks sick on Switch because you can move the Switch to move your camera.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Awesome. I'm going to replay this fucking game again. Like, there's no... Yeah, it's so fucking good.
I mean, these are some good games of the year, right?
Yeah.
When you look at it this way, we had some bangers come out, right? Every year when I think about video games that come out this year, I'm just like, I don't remember a single thing that happened. But this year, I think at least it was not a year of completely bland bullshit where everything felt soulless. There was some good shit. There was some good shit.
Absolutely. All right. With that, we should end this podcast so we can do our next one. Thank you all for joining us. We're going to sneak in another podcast, and then we're going to be done for the year. Cannot wait. I hope everyone has a good holiday, and I hope you enjoy our final podcast coming up in time. I don't know if it's a day. I don't know if it's 2 days. I don't know if it's next
week.
Might
be 2 days.
It'll be out when it's out. Yeah, we'll see. No promises, you know? All right. I guess we already kind of said it based on the whole Umurangi segment, but fuck capitalism, go home. We're not going anywhere. We have to fucking do more capitalism here and do another fucking podcast. So, but do what we don't do, go home. Spend time with your loved ones. Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
But like, don't go home if that means traveling.
No. Just like be at like in home your bubble. With, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Terms and conditions apply.
Terms and, yeah. Mm-hmm. Fuck.
Also, just, your recording is fine, right? You kept going?
Yeah. My record, fine.
Hmm?
Wait.
Glad I asked.
Let's see. It's a good thing that you asked. One second. Let's find out if it's fine. I'm going to need... None of what I just said is on this recording.
Okay. I have the backup.
You have that stuff, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Let me export this right now as part one.
Okay.
Cool.
And then we'll have to clap back in then.
Yeah. A truly stupid reason, which was I was like, well, my modem seems like it's trying to restart, but my computer is not connecting to it. Let me try to restart my computer.
Ah.
And I just hit restart. And I was like, yeah, just go ahead and restart it. It's fine. It was not fine. I had to save this.
Look at Mina in clockout mode behind you. That is Rob soon.
Oh my goodness. Oh shit. I didn't take another picture.
She's so adorable right now with her little paw.
I saw Rob doing this earlier.
She knows.
Christmas.
The person that I had come over to meet Cinder the cat yesterday. Cinder loved him. He really liked Cinder. She ate out of his hand. Aww. Like, I'm gonna email some shelter today to see if we can get her vetted cheap so that he could just take her home. Nice. Because
that'd be great.
Like, God, she's clearly like hungry and cold. That's a
miracle for Cinder.
I know. Like, I need to get her out of this fucking snow. I'm gonna set up a box out there today with something to burrow in, because I think she gets harassed by the rest of the cat colony. I think she's adopted by backyard. Yeah, I don't think the cat colony likes her. I don't think she bonded with her sibling. So she's really clearly depends on humans.
She wants people. Yeah.
She wants people. She tries to get in my house every fucking day. So
there you go. All right. Let's do another clap. Let's time that is.
Oh, right.
And make sure you refresh time that is if you've had it open. I learned recently that it will desync over enough time.
Seems self-defeating, but
I know.
There we go.
Are we there?
Yep.
Yeah.
So 20. So what's our time limit on this first?
It sounds like 1 p.m. is
I mean, Patrick suggested doing a time limit per game.
Yeah, I thought because these are all gonna be games we've talked about before, right?
Right.
So
like a, not there won't be new conversations, but a lot of it is
revisiting
old ground. And so I don't know, that has to be like Kata with a buzzer as much as maybe he's like giving you a soft nod or something like that. Yeah. It doesn't need to be like that, but chat. I think, you know, if we, you know,
it's only going to be four games, right? Or maybe even three. I don't know.
Well, Let's just reveal. Let's clap. I'm Hades.
Oh, wait, no, don't say it. Don't say it.
No,
don't
we should. We need to figure out what the overlap is. Okay, or do you want to do that on the pod?
I want to do it on the pod.
That's good content.
Okay, just.
Why is my camera not working? Also,
we'll do the math. We'll do the math in real time on the pod after.
Exactly.
That.
We'll talk about what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right. That's it. This is process.
All right. I think I have this. Did not share. Okay. I think this is just not working. It's fine.
Can you look at it on your phone? Worst case.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We're good. I mean, it doesn't fucking matter. You know what? It doesn't matter because it's not. It doesn't matter. Let's go to time.is.
All right, I'm ready.
Time. This is a regular episode. I don't need that intro. It's fine.
For once, I'm there before the podcast started.
Amazing. I got my backup going. I'm gonna one second. I'm gonna turn myself down just a little bit, just a little baby bit. I got a new mixer and a new mic.
Ooh, fancy.
Sounds better.
All right. Yeah, I'm hoping that it means good things. All right. Let's clap at 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
All right.